Thank you, Sebastian. Thank you, everyone, for coming. It's very I'm very excited to share a question that has been in my mind nonstop recently, and I have been working this together with my colleague Slava Ito. So today's seminar, I think instead of presenting a definite answer, because it's still an ongoing work, I think I will discuss about how I understand the question and what precisely is the question. And I will be so grateful to have the wisdom from the audience and for the probably for next month on trying to understand this question together. So probably many of you have been in Professor Perry's talk last week that it has been a surprising, nearly magical effectiveness of using the Cardi formula, which compute the asymptotic density state of a CFT, for that to compute the black hole entropy. And the idea started slightly more than 20 years ago by Strominger and has been developed for Kerr, for BTZ at first, and then extremal Kerr. And then in recent years, they can get the precise asymptotic symmetry charges and the central extension for generic Kerr. However, there is certain validity range of what's Cardi formula is valid, and also to derive a Cardi formula that's in the original derivation, you actually need to assume modular invariance and also the large energy limit, certain thing that it's not necessarily true for gravity, as we know. And also that there's always a question about where the CFT degree of freedom lives in this holographic picture. So I will take this as an important inspiration and try to understand this magical effectiveness in the covariant phase space of gravity, because my goal is understanding what this black hole entropy exactly account for, and why would a certain space-time appear as a central extension in the asymptotic symmetry algebra, and does it mean something important for its holographic nature, or it means something important for anomaly? So let me spend the next probably 5 to 10 minutes, give a very, very brief introduction of the some of the insights in this 20 years about using using Cardi formula is using some very generic property of CFT rather than we really need to know the specific detail. It's independent of the detail of the CFT. And so the observation started from at 97. There was a paper by Strominger called Black Hole Entropy from the Near Horizon Microstate. What he observed is that he does not need to assume string theory or any UV completion of gravity. Just use the fact that for certain black holes, the near horizon geometry can be locally ADS. With cosmological constant related with ADS radius. And at the semi-classical limit, which is the Planck length is very small, and for the CFT will be the central charge is very large. And one can use the Cardi formula for the entropy. So this is, will be in the macro canonical ensemble. Well, this delta comes from the eigenvalue. So here, delta accounts for the total energy times the radius of the system. And here will be the eigenvalue of the L0 and L0 bar of the Virazoro. Later, we will see how this generator comes out. And then for the BTZ, they are related with the mass and the angular momentum. And so finally, from simply knowing that near horizon, the BTZ geometry is locally ADS, and then we assume that the validity of ADF CFT, we compute the entropy given by the CFT state with the large central charge, and then where the R plus. So we get the entropy proportional to the length of the outer horizon. And so after that, there's a series of work by Karlip about analyzing constructing like Chern-Simon model in the 3D gravity and analyzing what's the boundary degree of freedom, also especially analyzing the validity of such an approach. Because so in some sense that Karlip formula is derived by the partition function, that it still actually hide the what's the actual degree, physical degree of freedom on the horizon. And so the development 10 years later, at around 2008, there's an observation of the current CFT duality by Strominger, Guica, so at first it was developed for extreme curve. That we know this is the situation with the maximum allow of the spin of given mass of the curve, and with the outer horizon at the place M. So in this way, we will have, the goal is to get the entropy equal to 2 pi n squared, which is 2 pi j. And so they were using a geometrical result in 1999. By Bardeen and Horowitz. Basically, the result is that if we look very close to the horizon of the curve geometry, which is, so we zoom in at, I use the hat of the original Borel linguist coordinate. So R is very close to the horizon, and then take an expansion of we take lambda goes to zero, but fix this R. So it's like the coordinate is very close to the horizon, but we redefine a new ratio between how close you are to the horizon and the mass of the black hole. And in this change, I wouldn't write down the detail of the coordinate transformation, but in this transformation, then, so if this direction is my phi and this is my theta, with every fixed theta, we get a locally ADS geometry again for this extreme curve solution, with a periodic identification of phi goes to phi plus 2 pi. And then by analyzing the asymptotic symmetry of this near horizon geometry of this extreme curve, of especially the vector field generate this symmetry. And expand, so this will be an arbitrary function defined on S1, and expand this field in terms of Fourier mode. In this way, we get the Birazoro algebra. And then the central charge from calculating the representation of the gravity charge algebra of this asymptotic symmetry, to get the charge is 12J. And then using the fixed temperature, so the canonical formulation of the Cardiff formula, one can derive the black hole entropy again. And this was so. This was like a prequel, the much 20 years ago, or much earlier, no, but 10 years ago, much earlier than what Perry introduced last week. That, so later there's development about precisely what exactly is this CFT. They constructed some string model, and also for a generic curve that's not in the extreme limit, they studied the phase space of radius times the energy that's very, very small, so it will be long wavelength region of the phase space, and find out there might be some conformal symmetry related with the generic curve space-time, and then one can perform a conformal transformation to get a near horizon limit, a local ADS again, and to apply in the asymptotic analysis to get the central charge. And in this way, using the canonical formulation of the Cardiff formula, here is the temperature of the CFT with this periodic identification, it's 2 pi. All those results are really nice, but I'm very curious about trying to understand that. So if I do not know about the CFT degree of freedom, just purely from the gravity phase space point of view, what exactly are the degree of freedom it is counting? We suspect that it might be related with the radial direction large diffeomorphism of the edge modes, that finally this there should be a volume of phase space that's related with the central extension of the gravity. That in this way, there is a way to connect with the anomaly of the large diffeomorphism, that if we do not know the precise CFT or the duality, this it will still consistent with this hint that we can compute exactly the degree of freedom on the horizon through the phase space of gravity. And so here is a bit of history. And then
Let's look at the basis of covariant phase space formalism. I think a lot of audience have already heard Paris talk last week that he gives the explicit formula of the charge symplectic form of the gravity. And here, I will talk more about the basics and my physical understanding of this formulation. It was developed since the 50s, started from 50s by Perils. Okay, so many names I wouldn't write about them, and then developed by Ashtar, Witten, Kranovich around 86, 87, and the Ward Lier analysis of the symmetry and the conserved charge of gravity on early 90s, and also Zompas, that's around end of 90s. And recent 20 years, it has been used a lot on analyzing asymptotic symmetry by Barney, Geoffrey, Flanagan, and also connect to the work last week about with Perry and Strominger. And so the basic idea is that we want to analyze the phase space without breaking the general covariance. So starts the input data is we have the action with, so here is field, if the QED will be gauge potential, showing gravity will be metric, with the derivative of fields. That's the boundary term on my spacetime. And so if I have more than first the derivative, then to make sure that the variation principle is valid, this part will be in gravity will be the Gibbons-Hawking term. So I need my variation to be vanished on the boundary. And so we get the equation of motion. Plus a symplectic potential. This is the, in the variation where we perform the variation principle, what's the total derivative you get? And so if my Lagrangian is, if my space-time is d-dimensional, my Lagrangian is d-form, and then my symplectic potential will be the d-1 form. And so the, how I see this picture is that, so supposedly you have space-time manifold that here you don't have metric in priori. I denote as M, and I have the Cauchy slice, and this is the boundary of the Cauchy slice. And then my field on each point of space-time, there will be on the fiber leaves the possible value of the field that the each hypersurface can relate it with one solution of my equation of motion. And the covariant phase space is looking at the solution space as the configuration. Will be a collection of all those sections on the on my bundles that satisfies on-shell condition. And my gauge transformation will, so here on each point, there will be a local gauge orbit that transform it from solution to solution. And a vector field on the space-time corresponds to a vector field on my phase space.
and my variation of dx will be tangential to the manifold, and my variation, so variation of the field will define a one form on the field space and corresponds to the vertical direction. So this will be a tangent space that is due to what self-defined is defined. So from this symplectic potential, one can immediately gather that data is the presymplectic form. Which, for example, for QED, the symplectic form is delta A wedge star delta. I will erase this side. And so we can, so from the symplectic form, from the symplectic potential, one can immediately construct the current, not a current. It's basically the symplectic potential with the variation comes my gauge transformation minus interior product with my D-form Lagrangian. And so for the general covariance theory, that we know that my variation of Lagrangian it's transformed covariantly, which will be a Lie derivative. And using the Cartan magical formula and also the closeness of the symplectic form, we get the current is always locally conserved. And so hence that one can define a function plus the terms that are proportional to the equation of motion. And then with a transformation of the field, one can define a difference of charges, which is different with this Q, which is an integration of, which finally becomes an integration of boundary term. So at first I will write it on the on a Cauchy surface of the usual way how we construct the Hamiltonian in the symplectic geometry. And here I add hat when I mean when it's a vector on the phase space rather than space time. And on shell, this gives which here is a two form. And here, to be consistent with some of the literature, I write it as K of so this quantity measures a change of the boundary Hamiltonian, or but the change of boundary charge between phi and phi plus delta phi. And it might not be an exact term. So in the sense that it will be a properly defined Hamiltonian if this integration is delta. So if it exists. And to recall in last week in Paris talk that to make their boundary charge to be exact, they actually need to add the counter term, which is crucial in the construction of a consistent algebra and a well-defined charge on the boundary. And so the exactness also means that this charge becomes independent. So if I try to connect the two solutions in the phase space, so if here phi bar is my reference solution and phi is my targeted solution, if it is exact, it also means that it is path independent of how I go from one solution to the other. So if I call the reference solution here, it's defined for the reference of this charge as n. When the Q is exact, one can write down its formula as from the field I'm looking at to relative to my reference field as this integration on the field space. This two form of the charge density and plus the reference point of where I define the reference. And in gravity, one can explicitly calculate this charge density, which is five terms with the variation of the metric and the background metric.
The correction term that you said you're supposed to add, is that supposed to be interpreted as changing the symplectic form that you have? Or I would have said if the charge isn't integrable, it just means there's not a symmetry and you're doing this transformation, you just are losing symplectic flux somewhere. Yeah. So you're saying you're adding something to get rid of that. So
yeah, adding the boundary symplectic form, and then to make a discharge in terms of the.
So did I actually change my base space then to do that, or because you added a boundary thing?
I think the counter term, yeah, it does change my phase space.
Okay. And you can show that this charge actually, that you construct in this way, actually generates the transformation. You said it's actually generating symmetry with Poisson brackets.
Yeah, so the next point. So with that, with the symplectic form we get and integrated on the Cauchy surface, and then one can study the. It generates the transformation of this field, and then, so the trivial diffeomorphism would be that. After such a transform, so a trivial diffeomorphism will correspond to my vector field such that my whole integration of the charge is just the zero. And then the asymptotic symmetries would correspond to this integration that would have a boundary contribution, which means that I'm looking at a transformations that labels by the degree of freedom on the boundary and transforming between the different solutions. And then they correspond to a non-vanishing charge in this construction. And then from the Poisson bracket, so if the charge is integrable, we can express it explicitly. And for some space times, the charge algebra stop here. But for some space time, it have a non-trivial central extension. On the first side, this term would just depend on my reference field. For example, I'm looking at asymptotic ADS or asymptotic flat spacetime. And if it's written in terms of the K and N, it will be by tuning what's the reference charge of my spacetime, then we can try to make this central term vanish. So in that way, the Poisson algebra will be homomorphism with the Lie algebra of the vector field. However, for some generic case, we don't expect this term to vanish. And this is the term that gives rise to the central charge in the dual CFT in the asymptotic symmetry algebra. And so this K is a two cocycle. Because one can very easily prove that by the algebra of Poisson bracket, it satisfies and is Casimir function on the phase space. In the sense that
For the piece of phase space I'm looking at with this reference field and the variation, this chunk on this chunk of phase space, it is has to be a constant. And also it doesn't generate any transformation because it commutes with all the other charge. And so when I was learning here about asymptotic symmetry, I was really puzzling like why such a quantity plays such an important role of knowing the density of quantum state. Also, another point I want to make is, for example, if one studied the asymptotic ADS symmetry, you can by changing the reference, point of the charge, one can treat the Lie algebra, which is the SL2R of the, which is the Lie algebra of the isometry group, to have the vanishing central extension. And then the higher part of the algebra will still need this extra term. And so in some cases, we know the situation when does this K vanish. So what is the sufficient condition that, this central term is trivial? First, in math literature, in the symplectic geometry literature, we can find that when the Lie algebra is semi-simple, and another point, which is very important for this related to the large gauge transformation, is that if my phase space is exactly symplectic, means so my symplectic form, the variation of my symplectic potential, and also if my symplectic potential is gauge invariant, and then one can prove that the central term definitely wouldn't come out by just like two-line algebra. So if I calculate the Poisson algebra of my charges, this will express us because this is field space vector. I will add a hat here. This term will vanish by the fact that if my symplectic potential is gauge invariant. If I plus a term of the So here is, we can do a very simple check to know that if my symplectic potential is invariant, then the central term definitely wouldn't appear in my algebra. And so this is related with the diffeomorphism edge mode that has been recent a few years developed a lot in this institute. that the original observation by Lohan and William is that the with the appearance of the boundary, symplectic potential isn't gauge invariant under the transformation. And then we can add a piece that's so if I use this as a gauge transformation of my symplectic potential. Then one can prove that when in the gravity case, one might diffeomorphism, the vector field generate diffeomorphism is parallel to the surface, the boundary of the surface I'm looking at. We can always add a boundary term. To make the symplectic potential default invariant. And in this way, the charge algebra you constructed naturally wouldn't appear that central term. But however, a situation we do not know is if the generator has the component that orthogonal to the boundary, which is usually if for the finite boundary, it will move the surface. But for those cases with the asymptotic ADS situation, when the boundary is infinity, the terms that contribute to the central extension, actually, the vector field will always have a term. For example, a function of psi derivative with the times r of the radial component orthogonal to the boundary. And so such a term tell us how my two copy of Vera Zorro embedded in the bulk in the ADS3. And this is the term that give rise to that central extension. So when we're looking at this diffeomorphism that orthogonal to the boundary, that we do not have the gauge invariant of the symplectic potential. So when it's not equal to zero, supposedly equal to a function, and that will be a field space one form. And then we can do a canonical transformation to absorb this G into the symplectic potential if certain conditions satisfy that. Canonical transformation means it is preserving my symplectic form. If there exists a field space one form, and it is exact such that my G equal to this Lie derivative, yeah, this is very trivial to see. Then we can always shift my symplectic potential with the alpha, and it doesn't impact my omega, and then I will have vanishing the so this shift
would gives me vanishing central extension and will correspond to I'm shifting the reference charge of the given background space-time, and with, so it will be equally as I'm shifting n, and then to get the vanish k, vanishing k.
You're just saying it, you can find an alpha such that the shifted one is invariant. That's what you're trying to do.
In this way, if I can find such an alpha, then my I can observe.
You want your new theta to go back to the original case, right, where the derivative is zero, right?
Yes, yes. So this will be a trivial situation that I can absorb the data and make the central extension vanish. But the non-trivial situation would be if I couldn't do such absorption, then oh, another small point is that my then this means that my so if I write for the so when my symplectic potential is gauge invariant, I can write my asymptotic symmetry charge just as the interior product with the symplectic potential. So in this way, everything is very neat. But if I can, if my symplectic potential isn't invariant under the direction that orthogonal to the boundary, then this expression will become a charge plus some term related with this vector field. And then we can get that the central extension. Will be a function of this extra piece, which isn't my symmetry charge. So this will be measured in what's the non-invariance of the symplectic potential here? So here I still need some calculation. But the conjecture is that, so supposedly here is my Cauchy surface with boundary that in the case that we know about the central extension of CFD will be infinity boundary. And my gauge transformation, so this is space-time M. My gauge transformation for the transformation that preserving the boundary data, also preserving certain fall-off condition. Inside the bulk, there still can be a degree of freedom of the variations. And so the volume of this phase space, so if it's consistent with the Cardy formula, the volume of this phase space with given the boundary data, which will tells me what's the angular moment, what's this curve black hole's angular momentum and mass, and fix the radius of the horizon. And the volume of this variation related with my
asymptotic transformation that are generated with the vector field that's orthogonal to the boundary, this volume should be an exponential of square, so let at a large charge, central charge limit, that square root of C or some, well, I shouldn't write down the form explicitly because in the middle of the calculation, but the volume should be a function of the central charge of this algebra for the just this pure gravitational degree of freedom. If I'm trying to measure the edge mode related with the transformation that's orthogonal to the surface.
That's the volume of what?
A volume of the, so given a reference solution, the volume of the phase space that allows me to transform that would still preserve this boundary and asymptotics, and what's the freedom in my solution space. And then from another, from another point I want to mention would be this the nature of the central extension. It is actually measuring the non-equivariance of the charge.
Do you have any reason to expect that volume to be finite?
So it will be an infinite volume, but will scaled with a function of the central charge.
Oh.
I would expect it's an infinite volume after integration. So this will be a rather separate direction that's probably eventually can relate with looking at the volume of the edge mode of in the phase space. But so far, it's only, so its equivariance is a concept in the mathematical literature about the non-equivariant cohomology. And so in this context, that will be, so if my symmetry group, Lie group, act on my phase space. And I write it as this, phi g. And my Lie algebra element. Which will, the Lie algebra element generate my transformation will map to a vector on the phase space. So under a symmetry transformation, so symmetry transformation of this vector on the, of the phase space, then this vector will become the adjoint inverse the group element on the side. And this the construction of charge is essentially a map from the phase space to the dual of the Lie algebra. The reason is actually, the reason is because we need that for any vector field in this Lie algebra, my definition of the charge, which is a variation of, so this will give me the function on the phase space, which is chart equal to the interior product of a vector field with my, the phase space vector field with my symplectic form. So this construction in the old classical, in the classical mechanics called moment map. And such an extension, the central extension appears, can be understood as a lag of the equivariance of the gauge transformation, of my symmetry transformation on this chart. So, so the existence of my central term will be the same, will be to understand it on the phase space, that will be, I have a symmetry transformation on the phase space and a construction of charge up to the dual Lie algebra. So the existence of the central extension is equivalent as saying this diagram doesn't close. So it's a measure a lack of the closeness of I do whether I do a map, a transformation on my phase space, or I define a charge first. And by the transformation of phase space, I need to look at the adjoint action on my vector field and how this is matching the after a transformation of my phase space and then construct the charge. And so that will be the non-closeness of this map will be described by this expression. And so if I write it in, because of the Poisson bracket is actually the infinitesimal transformation, if I write like as a finite version or saying I require my G close enough to the identity of my Lie group, then that will be so I add a term and subtract the same term. So this expression is zero or not will be equivalent of saying this map whether it's closed. And so if G, so if we are doing the a derivative of this expression close to G goes to identity, a derivative at G equal to identity of the adjoint action on the vector field gives you the Lie bracket of the psi with another direction you are doing derivative at. And this will gives you the Lie derivative of the Hamiltonian vector field generated by one charge, x on another charge, which is the Poisson bracket, so which is matched with the infinitesimal description. But an interesting thing is if you look at this expression, the form of it looks like as if like a covariant derivative, because the first part I'm varying the argument of the field. And the second part, I'm rotating my vector field. Which will be like, if on my solution space on S, I'm looking at phi, this is a gauge probably asymptotic symmetry transformation of the phi. And then this variation will be measuring whether a Q defines at with the difference of and minus the difference with if my each fiber here labels my Lie algebra element, that here I do a rotation of Q. So this will measures a change of the field first, and then a rotation of the vector field. Finally, whether my variation close or not. And so this is a direction that is still under development about. I'm trying to understand how to properly address the anomaly of this diffeomorphism related with the related with the transformation that orthogonal to the surface, how to understand it in terms of the how long the anomaly language. And also at the end, probably some experts can can give me advice about how this understanding of the black hole symmetry can be consistent with the entanglement entropy computation. And okay, so in summary, a few blackboard away that we've discussed the question of the magical effectiveness of using the Cartier formula to compute the black hole entropy. And in the holography community, that's a very nice result, but I want to understand it. Can I address what's the physical degree of freedom I'm accounting for in the gravity phase space, and why this central extension I get from my asymptotic symmetry algebra that would know the information of the density of the state on the boundary. And so we discussed about when we know that the central extension is definitely vanishing, when I can shift my symplectic potential to make it trivial. And for the generic case, that when we cannot do so, it's related with the non-invariance of the charge. And also we can formulate it in the non-closeness of this equivariance map. And so this is so far my understanding of the question. It's still very much open, and I'm looking forward for the wisdom from the audience. Thanks.
So do you have a picture here with this covariant derivative of this of some sort of connection on this phase space where you think of it as being foliated by the orbits of the group? So it would look kind of like a fiber bundle.
Yeah, so this will be like a covariant derivative on that bundle in terms of a phase space function. Yeah, I don't know yet. I think it can be formulated.
And so,
then
the claim, you would hope that this central charge is something like a curvature then.
Yeah, here will be a non-vanishing covariant derivative.
I have a naive question because I don't know anything about ADS CFT. So my understanding is that in the application of the Cartier formula to get the entropy of the black hole,
mm-hmm.
You have the near horizon geometry, which
mm-hmm.
is ADS, and therefore you have CFT on the boundary,
mm-hmm.
and you can compute the entropy of that CFT. So is the boundary there just near the horizon, or is it the horizon?
Very, very good question. So what's the So they take the geometry near horizon, so that will be just now this thing we wrote down. And so you fix the R and take the lambda goes to zero, which means I'm looking at the region close to the horizon. And then I take this new coordinate, I write down the metric. And then that becomes a new spacetime I'm looking at. It decoupled from the original curve. And so it's looking at the near horizon region, but then the CFT is living at the boundary of the large R of this new coordinate. And the new result from the last year about looking at the close to bifurcation surface and they do a conformal transformation, that might, so the author said like, they might be able to write a degree of freedom on the horizon.
So it seems that your calculations aren't finished yet, but what's
no.
your intuition of where do you want to go forwards from here? So what do you think is like, what do you want to do in order to understand this relation better?
So currently I'm trying to understand how to measure the volume of the phase space of the edge mode, which is orthogonal to the boundary, and whether that volume is certain, this will be a classical calculation to see whether the central extension is in this function of the volume. I think that will be like an intuitive check of how does it match with the Cauchy formula. And if it works, that will be a classical gravity understanding of the Cauchy formula. Because the application of Cauchy formula, there's assumption of modular invariance and it's not might present in the gravity. And also about the temperature, they need high temperature as well. But for extreme curve, the formula is applied when the temperature is exactly at 1/2 pi. So it's like at the boundary of the validity of the Cauchy formula. So it's quite mysterious about why the formula work so magically and get the correct result.
So I don't see any further questions. Lynching will stay around until December, so there's plenty of time to discuss. So let's thank her again.